We're going to talk about Southside's reopening plan, because there is a reopening plan, and it's time to unveil that, and it's time to share that with you. Now, before you get excited, you need to hear the announcements first, okay? Because some of you are going to be excited, and then you're going to be like, oh. So first of all, I want to thank the staff, and this has been a group project coming up with this plan. The ministerial staff has worked hand over foot. Lori has done so much. Dan has been making runs to stores in Abilene for us, and there's been a lot of behind-the-scenes thing to make this happen. So we want to thank everybody for doing that. Now, I have down here about 10 things I need to make sure I hit. So number two is just simply this. You know, there are a set of minimum standard protocols, is what they call it, that Texas has been asking churches to follow as you look at reopening and things like that. The first is just simply this. If you are age 65 or older, or if you have a compromised immune system, we've been asked to ask you to stay home. We want to do that. We want you to be safe. We want you to be secure. Now, as part of all that, our live stream that we've been doing, that's going to continue. That's going to continue on. It may look a little bit different. We'll talk about that here in a minute. But that's going to continue, so you can still watch here on Facebook. You can still watch somewhere else and not have to actually be here. And you could still be a part of it. You could still worship with us and all that. But if you've got a cough, if you have a fever, if you've got anything like that, please stay home. We love you, and we would like to love you from a distance that day. So please, seriously, take that seriously. Now, here's the part where some of you aren't going to like this, all right? So you ready for the part you're not going to like? We're going to start having in-person worship again next Sunday, but it's going to be limited next Sunday, all right? If your last name is A through M, we invite you to come next week. On the 31st, if your last name begins with N through Z, we invite you to come then. We've been asked to keep things as low numbers as possible, and we figure allowing 50% of the congregation is a good way to handle that. There's been a lot of prayer that's gone into this decision, a lot of looking at what this is going to be like. So this is what we're asking, all right? A through M, you get to come on the 24th, N through Z on the 31st. Now, we want to acknowledge something here, too, because someone's going to ask, well, I'm dating someone and our last names are different. Does that mean we can't come together? That's not what that means. Pick a week. That's what that means. You know, so remember, you're going, am I allowed to be there? I normally come to church with my best friend and we sit together. Are you going to allow that? Sure. Come to church with your best friend. Pick the last name that works. I will tell you, though, a lot more of our church people are on the first half of the alphabet than the second half of the alphabet. We're going to have a bunch of people here next week and, like, you know, just a small number probably in 2 weeks because that's the way that works. We do want to say that we're not going to be militant about that. We're not going to be sitting at the door carding you with your driver's license to make sure your last name lines up. If you are just absolutely going crazy and you want to be here, come. We want you here. And next week, if that comes and you're in the N through Z and you go, but I really want to be there, come and sneak up in the balcony. No one will even see you. You'll be fine. You can just hide out back there, right? I will tell you, though, that there is going to be some things about all that. We are going to have social distancing seating. So you're allowed to sit with your family, you're allowed to sit with a small number of peoples, but we want you to be 6 foot apart. Now, that's 6 foot around, okay? So that's kind of a big thing. It's not just going to be a sit wherever you want and everybody pile together. And we hate that for y'all. You hate that for y'all. But it's just the reality of what we're dealing with. As part of all that, though, you're going to walk in the door, and you will get to the door, and we're going to have a dedicated door person. That door person will open the door for you, and you'll get to walk inside. You won't even have to touch that door. We will have hand sanitizers at all the exterior entrances. The two that just this building is going to be open. The youth building will not be open. The education building will not be open. It'll just be this building, the worship building. From the two main locations, there'll be a hand sanitizer when you walk in there. In fact, not only are you encouraged to use that, but even when you walk in, you're going to get handed one of these. This is labeled the Southside Spritzer. It even says that right there, the Southside Spritzer. You're going to have your own little personal hand sanitizer that you can squirt on your hands and sanitize your hands. Okay, so there you go. Woohoo! So you're going to be handed one of those, and we want you to have one of those as well, too. We will also have masks and gloves available. We do not expect you to wear those at all. But if you want them, if it makes you feel better to have those, we will have disposable masks and gloves ready for you. We're still waiting on some of that to come in, but it should come in this week, and we should be good to go. And those will be at the door, and you can take those as well if that's kind of what will help you. We'll have one set of bathrooms that's going to be open here in the building, and the ladies' room and our family restroom will be the thing that's open here in the worship building. There's going to be someone that's their entire morning, they're not even going to be here in the service. They're going to be right there cleaning the restrooms all morning long, cleaning and cleaning and cleaning. But better yet, just don't drink a lot of coffee before you come, and then you won't have to use the restroom, and then it'll be fine. So we'll all hold it as a pain offering to Jesus, right? Okay, I've already talked about that. Now, part of all this is there's also going to be no nursery care at all for the foreseeable future. For now, it's just this room and this room only. There's not going to be children's ministry things. There's not going to be nursery ministry or anything like that. But I'm telling you, that doesn't mean we don't want you to come. That doesn't mean we don't want you here. If you've got a one-year-old who's fussy and cries a lot, we want to see your one-year-old fussy and crying a lot, even right here in this room. We really do. You're welcome to have your kid with you, even if they're screamers and even if they're kind of all that. It's more important to have you here than not here. But we do want to make this clear that there is not going to be nursery care. So please don't take your infants and babies and all that to the nursery, because you will, there's not going to be anybody there. So we do want you to make you aware of that. As part of all this, too, we really need about a half dozen volunteers. Now, here's the part that some of you are also not going to like this, too. We want people mentioned. You notice I mentioned people cleaning the bathrooms, people cleaning doors and things like that. We need some volunteers who would be willing to do some of that, who would be willing to say, look, I will be there. Now, here's the rule about the volunteers. You are going to be required to wear a mask and gloves, and you're not going to like that at all. And I'm so sorry, but that's just the way it's going to have to be. Just know, if you volunteer to be one of our door people, to be the person who cleans the bathroom, and y'all, we really need someone for that role. If you're willing to do that, we do expect you to wear gloves and wear a mask, and you're going to hate us for that, but it's for the safety of everybody, and it's for the good. So, but we do need about a half dozen volunteers, so if you want to volunteer, please give us a call at the office this week, and we're going to be compiling a list, and we're going to need them not just this week, but we'll need them the next week, and who knows how long we're going to need that. So pick a date. Volunteer, be here to help out and open doors for people or clean bathrooms for people. We need scowlers, right? You know, scowlers' entire job is just to scowl at the huggers, right? You know, you think that's like, you know, designed to keep, the scowlers is designed to just catch somebody in the hugging act. No. The scowlers are there just to, they're there to tempt you. Like if Lou's here and Lou's scowling, you're going to walk. Oh, look at Lou, he needs a hug. But you're not going to be able to do it. He's just there as a temptation. I'm picking on Lou. He's one of our huggers, y'all. About the scowlers, you know, we don't really need scowlers. We're Baptists. We have enough of those, right? Sorry, did I say that? That's even on the internet forever now. But one of the things that it's the most important thing to us is that you feel safe. And some of you do not need to be here, and some of you are going to be too scared to be here. And there's absolutely nothing at all wrong with that. We're going to be continuing our live streaming here on Facebook for months. It's going to continue on. Even when we're at 100% capacity and we're saying everybody can come to the church and we encourage everybody to be here, we're still going to be doing it this way. We've committed to do that possibly even up to a year if we need to. We're hoping we don't have to do it that long, but at least right now, Charlie and I have been talking about that and working on that. We have the ability and the capacity and licensing fees and all that set up, so we could do this for many, many months if we need to. This is going to continue. Now, I do want to tell you that it will probably sound and look a little bit differently. Right now, this camera is front and center. It may not always be front and center. And in fact, once we're at 100%, it's going to be a lot different than it is right now. The sound is going to be a little bit different. The nice part is with the live stream, we're trying to do our sound just for the live stream. The way it sounds in this building is different than the way it sounds coming through your computer. Once there are people here next week, our focus is going to be on the people that are actually inside here. So the sound might be a little bit off. It's probably not going to change all that much than what you've been hearing, but it will be a little bit off. We want you to be aware of that. But it'll be enough where you kind of know what to expect and what to go with and all of that kind of thing. Is there anything I've forgotten, anything I've missed out? All right, I'm looking at the other staff member here, and he's kind of going, no. If you have questions, please ask us. Please let us know. We'll deal with all that. We're excited about having people back here in the building, and we're excited about having having worship under the same roof, at least a little bit. And I know that the half the congregation at a time isn't going to sit well with some of you. And I know that some of you you may not understand the reasoning behind that, and that's okay. We just ask you to kind of respect that and kind of be a part of all that. There are always those people that say, and I've heard this, people have said, well, God's going to protect us and God's going to take care of us. And he might do that. He might choose to do that. But I also know that God designed each one of us with an immune system and gave us an entire book of the Bible, Leviticus, that's just basically about health laws, about ways to do things to take care of yourself. The reason we're doing all this is because we recognize that there are certain things that we can do to help keep you safe, but also help you be here, and that's what we're hoping to do. So we hope we've covered everything. We hope we've dealt with all of that. We hope that we've answered all your questions. We'll be putting this information out on Facebook either later today or tomorrow. I'm not sure when it's going to be coming out. But you'll be able to see these guidelines and all that kind of stuff. And if you have any questions, feel free to let us know. And but in the meantime, we're going to continue on with this little series that we've been calling Life, God, and Other Small Topics. We're not calling it a sermon series because we're not preaching sermons. We're having little talks, and we're dealing with all that. But before we get into all that, like I've done every week during this crazy live stream time, for 9 weeks we've had all that, and this is our very last one because we're going to be back to in-person worship next week. Are you ready for this week in memes and in funny things and in all those things we saw? Y'all, our praise team is like exhausted. They're just sitting out there looking like zombies right now. I wish you could see them. You'd be praying for them. Pray for them. So this week in memes and in funny things, and this one's one you really have to see on your screen, so we'll put this one here. It says, for the first time since 1945, the Scripps National Spelling Bee has been called off. That one's pretty good right there, because we don't know how to spell canceled. You get it, spelling bee, you just know how to spell canceled. Okay, here's one that, memes have just disappeared, good funny memes. So this is one I saw weeks ago, and I'm just including it for the first time, and it's this. When you're not going to let coronavirus cancel your baptisms, we'll hose you off in hazmat suits, and kind of do that. That's pretty good. This next one, and actually the next three aren't exactly memes about all this, but the next one was something that a pastor, a friend of mine, posted this week. And I appreciate what Glenn had to say. Here's what he actually said. He posted this on Facebook. He said, when God puts a calling on your life, he already factored in your stupidity. It's the most comforting thing I've ever heard. I love that. That has absolutely nothing to do with the coronavirus right now, but it has everything to do with life and other small things. This next one I want to set the stage for. This last week, I meant to show this one last Sunday, and I forgot. A week and a half ago, our city, when we couldn't have Cinco de Mayo parade and party downtown and all that, they scheduled a Cinco de Mayo wave parade. And over 50 cars got together, and they drove around to the nursing homes, and we waved to residents, and we waved at all that. One of the guys over at Senior Care over in Early, I didn't think I had been able to get a picture of him, but apparently I did. He was at the very end of my daily video. This is this guy that I saw over at Senior Care over in Early. It's this guy. He's wearing his mask in his wheelchair, and it says, send tacos. I love that, y'all. I really, really love that one. And this last one is actually, this is a true story. This is not a joke. This is actually something that happened. There's a restaurant over in Germany that this little cafe opened back up. And over there in Germany, they were allowed to open up as long as they followed 6-foot social distancing rules. So here, take a look at this picture in this headline. It says, German cafe gives customers pool noodles to wear on their heads to enforce social distancing. When you sat down at this cafe, they gave you a hat with 3-foot pool noodles attached to it. 6-foot, like 3-foot on either side. So that way they would give you this hat. That way you would know if your pool noodle is hitting someone else's pool noodle, you're too close. And I just thought that was the funniest, craziest, most creative thing I've seen all week long. So that's our final of this week in memes that we've done over the last 9 weeks. And we'll kind of leave that there. We've been doing this series we're calling Life, God, and Other Small Topics. I do want to remind you, this is what we've talked about. It's basically based off of two verses, both found in Proverbs. This one in Proverbs 4, verse 23 actually says this. It says, guard your heart above all else, for it is the source of life. This is what this is about. This entire series is about learning how to guard your heart above all else, for it's the source of life. The other one that we've been doing here in Proverbs, and we'll put this here on the screen so you can see it as well too, and it says, the first to state his case often seems right until another comes and cross-examines him. That's in Proverbs 18:17. And This has been the theme that's kind of been starting off with this this little series. This has been our motto. This has been the thing that's been motivating us and why we've chosen to do this. Now, today I want to talk about what we're doing, and I want to talk about it through showing you a magic trick. I am not a magician at all. In fact, I wanted to start off with a magic trick today, and I didn't have one. So you know, this little thing, this little colored thing, see, I can change this. I can make this change colors just by dragging it through my hand, right? Isn't that fancy? Aren't you impressed? The praise team is not impressed. Except for Carl. Carl's going, whoa, what happened? See, Carl, here you go. We'll do it back. Isn't that impressive right there? You know, somewhere there's a little kid watching this and he just turned to mom and dad and went, right? But there's a trick. I mean, behind every trick, behind every illusion, there's something that's going on. And once you understand what's going on, it makes it easier to see. This is just a, it just takes that little bit of understanding, right? The adults here have already, when I was a little kid, I saw this happen and I was just floored by it. But it's a little trick. We're going to spoil it right here. You see what's happening? Look, it's just a little thing that you turn it inside out and the inside's one color and the outside's a different color. So as it slips through the ring, it turns it inside out. See? Lacey's over there going, oh, that's amazing. It had fooled me. I thought you had actually changed its color. Lacey's not really doing that. She's a Harden Simmons girl. She's a smart girl, right? Okay. But you know, here's the thing I want you to catch from it. It's always about understanding, right? It's always about those things that until you understand it, you go, I just cannot see how that happened. It's about your point of view. It's about how you're seeing things. I remember there was a show on a few years ago that was talking about, I've always been fascinated by how magicians and illusionists, how they do their things. And there was this whole little thing where they were showing how they did it. And I'm going, that is amazing. The things that they do to trick you. And all it took was me understanding what happened. Now, I say all this to bring up this point because there's something that people struggle to understand. There's something that people as a group that they struggle to wrap their brain around. And it's just simply this, okay? And I have heard this for a long time, and you've heard this as well too, that there are just some things that we don't understand, but especially when it comes to the idea of suffering, and especially with the idea of what it comes to the existence of evil. We know that suffering exists, and we know that evil exists. Why do we know that? Because we exist, and we've experienced those things. So what happens is the skeptic wants to use this to defame God's character. They want to use this to put a doubt in your mind about if God actually exists. And the argument kind of goes like this. The argument kind of goes, okay, either God is all powerful or he's all loving, but he can't be both, right? So either he's all powerful, he has the ability to stop evil and he chooses not to, or he's all loving. But if he doesn't stop evil, then he can't be all loving, right? Do you kind of catch the flaws here? Do you kind of catch what's going on? Now what happens is, realistically, this isn't even an argument that the militant atheist for, that's a term that one guy called himself in the reading I was looking at this week. He called himself a militant atheist. I thought that was a fascinating term. An atheist who wants to go out of his way to convince you that God doesn't exist, they don't even use this argument anymore because this argument clearly has a lot of flaws. But what happens is it's an emotional argument, like we talked about as we left off this series. It's about tagging those emotions. It's about tying into those emotions. It's about developing this emotional response from you. So what it boils down to is something that all of us have struggled with. Evil has touched our lives, and when that happens, you can never look at life the same again. Our culture here in the United States, we struggled with this after 9/11 2001, didn't we? All of a sudden, the way you looked at life changed a little bit. We talked in our panel discussion about 3 weeks ago here about how this time of stay at home and all that has kind of changed our society, changed our culture, changed the way we view things, right? So what happens is the problem of evil is just nagged at the thoughts of men and women for a long, long time. But the truth is, God wants you to understand the source of it, not just the fact that it exists, not just the effects of it. I want you to see this in Romans 1, verse 28 and 29. Romans 1 is an amazing passage. But I love what 28 and 29 says. And it says, because they did not think it worthwhile to acknowledge God, notice what God does. God delivered them over to a corrupt mind so they did what is not right. They are filled with all, well, let me stop here for a minute. Notice here for a minute it says, hey, that mankind, humans, us-ins right here, right? That we chose not to focus, acknowledge God, not to focus on him. So instead, God goes, okay, I'll deliver you over to your corrupt mind. Okay, you can believe what you want to. You could do what you want to do. And notice what happens here in verse 29. It says they're filled with all unrighteousness, evil, greed, and wickedness. They're full of envy, murder, quarrels, deceit, and malice. Now, when it comes down to it, when you look at this passage, where does evil come from? Why does evil exist? Free will. That's what it comes down to. This is actually what Romans 1:28 says. It says, God lets you decide who you wanted to be. And as a result of all that, unrighteousness, evil, greed, wickedness, we're full of murder, quarrels, deceit, and malice. And this passage continues on, and you can see other things that are going on as well, too. But notice it's about free will. We're going to come back to this idea, okay, about free will. But one of those things that I always hear people say is they say that, well, it doesn't take being a Christian. So this leads to this question. I want to ask you this question. Can humanity be good without God? This is an argument I hear that they claim, and rightly so, that it's not just Christians that have the market cornered on being nice or doing good things. I remember the first time I encountered this argument. I was a teenager, and I heard a guy said, well, you say that Christians love people, but Ralph over there, his name wasn't Ralph. I tried this morning to remember his name. I don't remember his name. But the guy made the argument to me. He said, Ralph over there is Jewish. He believes differently than you, and he's a nice guy, and he's a good person, right? It's a good question to ask. But that's not exactly what I'm asking. I'm asking the question, does humanity have the capacity to do good things without God? And that short answer is yes, but it's simply this, okay, for a minute. I want you to catch this. It's not because humanity doesn't need God because to be good, but it's because God created us in his image. And part of that is this moral law that's written inside of us. Do you kind of catch that here for a minute? It's not about you're doing what God wants so you can do good things. It's about you understand that there's good and there's evil because of something that God has put inside of you. C.S. Lewis talks about this in his book, Mere Christianity. And you don't get very far into the book. You're on, I think, page 8 when he said this. He's going to talk about what he calls the law of nature. This law of nature is that inbuilt thing in you that goes, I recognize that there are things in this world that are wrong, right? Eating puppies. Nobody should eat a puppy. You shouldn't do that, right? All right. So here's what C.S. Lewis said. He said, These then are the two points I wanted to make. First, that human beings all over the earth have this curious idea that they ought to behave in a certain way and they cannot really get rid of it. Secondly, that they do not, in fact, behave in that way. They know the law of nature, they break it. These two facts are the foundation of all clear thinking about ourselves and the universe we live in. So here's this idea that we're not going to talk too much about today, but it's the idea that the law of nature is built inside of us. And indeed, it is. The law of nature, I'm sorry, the law of God is written inside of us. The reason we recognize evil and the reason we recognize good is because we are created in the image of God. And that's just simply the way it is. And I want you to catch this here for a minute. If there are things that are wrong, regardless of the country, regardless of the culture that you're in, regardless of the context that they're committed in, then there is an ultimate law and there has to be an ultimate lawgiver. That's the way that works. Lewis spoke about this. He called it a transcendent moral law that is pressed upon the hearts of every single person. But here's the thing I want you to catch for a minute. We have this capacity, we recognize that evil exists, and we recognize that there's something in us that goes, that is wrong, and it shouldn't be that way. And if that's the case, but if it didn't come from being created in the image of God, then where does it come from? Think about that here for a minute, okay? If all of us kind of have this little, we go, okay, there's evil exists in the world, well, then it can't be, then that's just proof that God doesn't exist, which is the argument we're dealing with today. We're dealing with that argument that people say, well, there's evil in this world, so God cannot exist or he would have solved that. But I want to back up here for a minute. If God doesn't exist, then where does this idea of good and evil come from? Sam Harris, he's a famous atheist, and he put it this way. He talked about in the moral sphere, this is his quote, in the moral sphere, it's safe to begin with the premise that it is good to avoid behaving in such a way as it produces the worst possible misery for everyone. This is the idea that I get commonly pointed. If you go, okay, how can evil exist if God doesn't exist? How can good exist if God doesn't exist? And they go, well, we decide that, right? It's all about what's the least evil for the most people. You kind of catch that logic here from it? But that kind of, I'm not okay with that. Because your evil actions aren't just based upon who it hurts. You judge, and you don't just judge actions by upon how hurtful they are. Because one of the dangers about that is because if it hurts fewer people, then it's less evil to someone else. Does this mean that, you know, that if your actions just hurt a few people instead of a lot of people, that you're really okay? That's not a very good basic for describing good and evil. That's like the guy who stands in front of the judge and says, "Judge, I know I just killed one guy, but look at the 29,000 other people here in the city I didn't kill." Would you judge that guy as no? Because it's not about how many people it hurts. You cannot have your morality based upon the masses. You cannot have your morality based upon just whatever you want it to be. Immanuel Kant, I love this guy, man. This guy, Immanuel Kant, he talks about how he is who he is because of the God of the starry skies and the moral law that's built inside of us. It's pretty amazing. I wish I had time to talk more about him. But I love what he said. He kind of has the law. He says, I want you to think about what would happen if everybody acted that way. Think about what would happen if everybody acted the way you do. If everyone acted on what you consider evil and what you consider good. We see this a lot of times from people who, they're okay if they lie, but they don't like being lied to. You know, it's all about, I can manipulate and I can do things as long as I get my way. But what really is going on is something much deeper. And so what happens is a lot of people who use this argument, they say, man, evil exists, so God must not. Really, there's something deeper going on and there's something more important going on. This whole law about if it hurts other people and all that kind of stuff, is that kind of what Jesus said in Luke 6:31? Look at what Jesus said in Luke 6:31. We'll put it here on the screen. He says, just as you want others to do for you, do the same for them. Right? Well, he said, do the same for them. Yeah, do the same them. There's good English right there. I guess I took out a word, didn't I? Do the same for them. Here's the picture. We call that the golden rule, right? Treat others the way you want to be treated. But here's what's happening. People like Sam Harris and people like all that, they're kind of taking this type of mentality and they're going, well, we know what right and wrong is. We don't need God to discover what evil is because it's built into every single one of us. What's happening is they're taking their mindset here in the 21st century and they're looking back to past generations, past centuries, past cultures, and they're applying their philosophy to them. All right? Think about this here for a minute. Can you picture Napoleon acting this way? Can you picture Alexander the Great acting this way? Here's the thing I want you to catch for a minute. This idea of when Jesus says this, just as you want others to do for you, do the same for them. This is a complete role reversal of the survival of the fittest mindset that we have had through the past and we still have in so many ways today. So I just want you to think about this. So I want to take a moment. I want to look at this problem of evil another way. What would evolution say about the problem of evil? Have you ever thought about that? What would evolution have to say about the problem of evil? Now, even hardcore evolutionists try to distance themselves from the philosophical implications of Darwinian evolution. Richard Dawkins, that's a guy we talked about a couple of weeks ago. I love what he said. He said, I very much hope that we don't revert to the ideal of survival of the fittest in planning our politics and our values and our way of life. I have often said that I'm a passionate Darwinian when it comes to explaining why we exist. It's undoubtedly the reason why we're here and why all living things are here. But to live our lives in a Darwinian way, to make our society a Darwinian society, it'd be a very unpleasant sort of society in which to live. I appreciate that honesty. I really kind of do. He also, Richard Dawkins, when you deal with all that, here's something that he said. Later on in another book, he said, DNA neither cares nor knows. DNA just is. And we dance to its music. Now, here's the thing I want you to catch for a minute. If evolution is all about survival of the fittest, and Darwinian evolution is about it's only the strongest that survive, and you need to prey on the weak, and who cares about the weak? And if DNA truly doesn't care, doesn't know, and we just dance to its music, if that's the thing that makes us up, then why do we care, and why do we know? Why would we care if our genetic wiring is the exact opposite, right? How would evolution, how would that Darwinian evolution deal with the problem of evil? Well, it's going to say, hey, it's a good thing, because it's about survival of the fittest. It's not about caring. It's not about taking care of anyone else. It's just about you. But yet in our 21st century mindset, we go, that's a horrible way to live. Even so much the Richard Dawkins guy who goes, man, I am wholly committed to this concept, but I hope that we don't use it to determine laws and the way we live our lives, right? You kind of catch the picture here for a minute? Why would we care if our DNA just says all that matters is survival of the fittest? We wouldn't have the capacity to care, the capacity to love. I truly don't think we would have that. And there is no answer that evolution, that things outside of God can give us that. Now, I want you to experiment here with me for a minute. I want you to pretend you're God, right? Some of you are going, I live my life that way anyway, so it's okay. Sorry, was that all? Okay. I want you to pretend you're God, and you're about to take on the most incredible task. You're going to create the earth, and you are going to create mankind. So here's what we're going to do. Let's create a world, all right? We're going to create the earth. We're going to create mankind. We're going to create all this. Let's go ahead and get that on there. There's three options here that you could do that. The first is you could create a world of control, right? Let's say you're going to do this. You could create a world of control. Basically, you do not give mankind, you do not give humans the capacity to choose for themselves. You do not give them the ability to choose evil, right? Notice we said earlier, evil exists because of free will. So let's just take that out of the equation. You can create that, where mankind does not, and the individual does not have the ability to choose to do an evil thing, they can only choose to do good. By the same token, other than control, you could create chaos. You could create a world out of chaos. Absolutely no intervention on your part as the creator. You just create, you let them do whatever they want to, no consequences, no nothing. You're not going to be involved at all. What would this world look like? Truly the survival of the fittest that Richard Dawkins was just saying he was so scared of. But there's a third option, cooperation. God could have created a world in which he gives us real choices to make. He works amongst us. He acts according to his purposes, his promises. But what happens is he makes a covenant with us, and he enters our lives as we invite him to come in. Can you think of another option other than these? If you were creating mankind, when it comes to choosing right and wrong, you can either give them the ability to choose for themselves and just leave it alone. You could take away their ability to choose for themselves, where you're just controlling them. They're just robots then. Automatons, as C.S. Lewis is going to call them in a quote we're going to look at here in a minute. Or you go, how about this? How about there's a cooperation? I'm going to create you, and I'm going to be involved, and I'm going to help you. I'm going to be there every step of the way. We will go through this thing called life together. I'm right there with you every step of the way. Because it all comes down to free will. It all truly does come down to free will. This problem of evil that people say they have, you want to know where that really comes from? It comes from our decision that God has created inside of us to be able to do good things, to be able to do bad things. It comes from within us. And spoiler alert, humanity is not the first ones that had that kind of a choice. We know that the angels had that too. Remember what happens there. One angel rebels, and he's able to talk about a third of the angels into him, and he tries to take the place of God. He chooses the bad way. He gets kicked out of God's presence, so then God creates mankind, and he goes, I'm going to do this cooperation way. I'm going to do this where we can work together and we can do all that. So what does Satan do is he goes, hey, man, I had gotten kicked out of heaven. I had gotten kicked out of God's thing by trying to do it myself, so let's convince mankind that they could do it by themselves too. And what happens? Same result. Mankind chose the bad, got kicked out of the presence of God and all that. But it all truly comes down to free will. The question is, why does that matter? Does it matter? Yeah, it does. Why does it matter that God gave you the ability to choose good? I mean, the ability to choose evil, but also that means you have the ability to choose good. I want you to see this quote from C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity. He said, God created things which had free will. That means creatures can go right or wrong. They can go wrong or right. Sorry, I read that wrong. Some people think they can imagine a creature which is free, but had no possibility of going wrong. But I can't. If that thing is free to be good, it is also free to be bad. And free will is what has made evil possible. Why then did God give them free will? Because free will, though it makes evil possible, is also the only thing that makes possible any love or goodness or joy worth having. A world of automata, of creatures that work like machines, would hardly be worth creating. I love this picture. Why free will? If it creates evil, if it creates all this horrible stuff? Because it's also the only thing that makes possible any love, any goodness, or any joy worth having. That comes from free will. And I want you to catch this picture. When we talk about how God could have created the world with control and just we're robots, or with chaos and we're just left to our own, or cooperation, when it comes down to it, he put his own life on the line because Jesus stepped down into our suffering. Jesus takes on flesh and dwells among us. I love what Philippians 2 says and verses 5 through 8. It says, adopt the same attitude as that of Christ Jesus, who existing in the form of God did not consider equality with God as something to be grasped. Instead, he emptied himself by assuming the form of a servant, taking on the likeness of humanity. And when he had come as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even to death on a cross. This is the picture. Jesus steps down into creation and becomes one of us. And I want you to think about just how monumental that was. Jesus takes on flesh. He is in nature God, but he takes on humanity. And this was not just for a 30-year period. This is the way most people kind of picture. They picture that Jesus becomes human. He becomes one of us, and he lives, and then he dies, and he goes back into heaven, and he reverts to who he was before. No, he will be that form forever. Jesus took on humanity, and he became one of us, and he stepped down into our suffering. As it says in Hebrews 4:15, that we don't have a high priest who's unable to sympathize with our weakness, but one who has been tempted in every way just as we are, yet without sin. You kind of catch this picture? Jesus knows what it is to be one of us. He knows what it feels like to skin your knee. You know, a lot of people, you ask them about Jesus and you go, Jesus was sinless, right? But people take that to mean Jesus was perfect. Being clumsy isn't a sin. Right? It's not. We never see that Jesus was perfect in that way. We see that he was sinless. I think Jesus tripped and skinned his knee. He knows what that feels like. He knows what it feels like to have mama coming with a rag to wipe all the dirt off. And you're going, no, it's going to hurt worse, right? He knows that feeling. He had friends. He knows what friendship feels like. He knows what the betrayal of friendship feels like to a huge extent. He knows what it's like to go through puberty. He knows what it's like to have to learn to talk and walk. The God who created the mountains and the oceans and the stars and all these incredible things had to learn to walk on human legs. You kind of catch that picture here for a minute? Jesus steps down into our suffering and experiences all the evil that mankind has to offer. Why? Because this is the way that God created the world, with this idea of cooperation. And the cooperation is enormous when you think about what Jesus did. As it says over in Isaiah 53, I love this passage. Starting in verse 3, it says, he was despised and rejected by men, a man of suffering who knew what sickness was. He was like someone people turned away from. He was despised and we didn't value him. Yet he himself bore our sickness. He carried our pains. But we in turn regarded him stricken, struck down by God and afflicted. But he was pierced because of our rebellion, crushed because of our iniquities. Punishment for our peace was on him, and we are healed by his wounds. We all went astray like sheep, and we have all gone our own way. And the Lord has punished him for the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. Like a lamb led to the slaughter, and like a sheep silent before his shears, he did not open his mouth. I love verse 8. It says, he was taken away because of oppression and judgment, and who has considered his fate? For he was cut off from the land of the living. He was struck because of my people's rebellion. He was assigned a grave with the wicked, but he was a rich man at his death because he had done no violence and he had not spoken deceitfully. We could go on and on and on about this, but I want you to catch this picture here for a minute. How does God deal with the problem of evil? Jesus steps down and becomes one of us and becomes a man of suffering. Why? So that someday evil is done away with. So that one day all that bad stuff is not anything we have to worry about. He took on the form of a servant. He takes on humanity. He takes on flesh and he dwells among us so that we don't have to be ruled by what's evil. We don't have to be ruled by what's wrong. We don't have to be ruled by what is bad. Jesus becomes one of us so that we could experience a relationship that couldn't happen any other way. What does evil look like? How about putting to death the Creator who loved us so much and was willing to do that so that we could be restored to a right relationship with God? That is amazing. So I want you to understand here for a minute. There's no real answer to the problem of evil outside of we choose to do that. But God chose to send Jesus to die on a cross for you and for me. To be obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. A very extremely painful, horrific way to die. But Jesus is willing to do that because he loves you and he loves me. And if we can dwell on that this week, it's going to deepen your faith and it's going to deepen your trust in God. But not only that, but it helps you have a reasonable defense for the faith that you have. When people go, oh, it's so stupid to believe in God. You go, no, it's really not. It helps you understand that there's reasons why you believe in God, that there's reasons why that evolution, that God doesn't exist and just cannot explain away. And one of those is the problem of evil. Let's bow in a word of prayer. Lord, we thank you for how you work. We thank you for how you do amazing things. You love us so much, and you sent your Son to die for us. Thank you for that incredible sacrifice. For your name, we pray.